Hello, hello. This is Gravel Talk calling. Welcome to a new edition of our podcast about a very, very special group of people. Lovely people. Exciting people. Crazy people. People who like to ride on motorcycles, even though there exist flying carpets, trains, and even donkeys. Our Gravel Talker today is Jussi Mäki from Finland.
Jussi,
who lives in the southwestern Finnish town called Pori, is a loving father of three children, a loving husband of one wife, and a loving owner of a BMW R1250 GS Adventure. What a great motorcycling personality! By the way, Jussi is also the president of one of Finland's largest motorcycle clubs called Konipyöräklubi. Well, I guess I have to work on that one. In this episode of Gravel Talk, Jussi will talk about Finland as a motorcyclist destination. Also, he will share some of his own experiences out on the road. Experiences he likes to share with his partner in crime, as he calls his wife. So, let's get ready to throttle. Come on inside and meet
Jussi.
Hello, Jussi. How is lockdown in Finland these days? Is it strict?
No. I think that we have been doing quite well all the time. So compared to other countries, the situation. The best protection for us is that there is so few of us. We are so little country that I think it protects us the best way. But anyway, we haven't got the really any lockdowns actually.
Really?
So we are using masks and we are, but you know, the stores are open and even the bars are open and restaurants. And we have some limitations. I think that it's at the moment it's 10 people or less you have to have, but the schools are open and of course I'm working remotely basically all the time as always. But anyway, it's quite easy in Finland. I think that the real price of this will be, we will see it in the future. I think that people are really not doing so well anyway, those people who were in a difficult situation before the lockdown or before the COVID situation, I think that they are hurting the most. So it's we will see. But
what do you do for a living? What is your profession?
I work as a head of unit in company called Securitas. So I'm working in private security and I'm running quite a big unit in Western Finland and basically we are doing security services for nuclear power plants. So I'm all security guy in my profession. Not a police, but anyway, not so far away from that. Otherwise, I'm really, really easygoing. But basically, it's selling services, human resources, and managing people. So Everything else is easy, but managing people.
So Jussi, let's talk about motorcycling. How long have you been a motorcyclist? When did this all start?
I think that I started when I was 9 years old. I was living in the countryside in Western Finland. And you know, at that time, there was no PlayStations or anything else. So you needed to pick something up. And of course, in Finland, you do ice hockey in the winter time, but in the summer and otherwise. We had some mopeds and we were able to repair them and I'm learning all the time. And after I grow older, I would say, I had a 125 bikes, you know, the A3 or A1 bikes they are called these days. But anyway, 125cc Honda and Yamaha, and that was back in the 90s, early 90s or so. And when finally I grow big, I'm really big, so so then I've had different kinds of bike, and now the adventure bikes are what I'm doing right now with the big BMW. But before that, I had three Suzuki Hayabusas. I was really liked those Hayabusas, and they are not, you know, like the track bikes, but very super powerful sport bikes, and also you can do up with the Hayabusa, and we did long tours in across Europe with the Hayabusas with my wife, Italy and France and whatever, even to Alps with the Hayabusas and but then they never came up with the new Hayabusa, so I started to look something else, and I have some history also with motocross, so it was easy for me to look at the adventure bikes. And of course, it was something difficult, something different. I mean, after Busas and that, so it was really nice. And I bought a Honda X1200 crossover, I think it was, and it was like something like BMW GS. And after that, I had two GS adventures, and at the moment, 2019 GS adventure. I'm happy with that. And it's a big bike, but I think it's quite agile anyway, capable of doing things. So.
What do you prefer? Go on the road or go cross country or both? Or?
Both. I think I'm actually a chairman in this motorcycle club in our city, Porian, and I don't know why, but they wanted to have me as a as a big boss, starting from this year, and we are. Little more than 400 people right now. And before that, I trained myself as an instructor, motorcycle instructor. So, whatever I do, I want to develop my skills and want to find the boundaries that what can I do and what I can't do. And if I can't do something and I see that someone else can do that, then, I have to be able to do that. So I want to train myself. That was the first idea 10 years ago. And now I've been running very many courses to improve myself and of course, work as a trainee in our motorcycle club. So it's also part of my hobby. Our club is based basically on touring bikes. It's a touring club, so to say. It's lots of big BMWs and Honda Goldwings and bikes like that. But of course, I'm trying to put in some gravel light in the fire, you know. And people are scared to drive or ride in the gravel roads, but usually you find the best views and the nicest places. You have to go gravel first, and then you find the nicest nature and everything, at least in Finland. So these kind of things, there's much more. And I also enjoy riding on track. And training on track, even with the GSA, it's actually quite fast, but in the track if you want. So, I have these various ways with my hobby.
Do you prefer to drive on your own or with other people?
I prefer riding my on my own, because then I have to care about only myself. but of course, we do a lot of riding together, and we have weekly meetings in the summertime. We ride together and then I ride with my wife two up and with my son two up. But all in all, it's how can I say, it's me time when I ride bike on my own. So then I don't have to worry. I don't have to be a father or a boss or anything else. It's just me and my bike. Yes. So I think that's the biggest motivation for me. If you ask why, I think that the answer is somewhere in those sentences.
So tell me more about your motorcycle club. 300 members is quite a number. What else do you do besides being on the road? I mean, you're not on the road all the time, or are you?
Not all the time, no. It's very free, you know. We don't have any kind of restrictions if you have, like, for example, motorcycle brands. So it doesn't matter if you ride a Harley Davidson or BMW, Ducati, whatever, you ride what you want. It's the focal point is the motorcycle, and I think that we are concentrating on traveling mainly, and we are trying to travel with motorcycles all around the globe, but basically in Finland and in Northern Europe and in Europe in general, and we do some trips together. Also, in for example, Estonia from Finland, it's easy to go to Estonia for a long weekend as a big group. But otherwise, it's the action is happening here in Finland. The other thing is that we try to train ourselves to be we are focusing on being safety drivers. We are safe drivers and trying to come back home safely when we go riding. So that's another focus point in our motorcycle club. And then there is this charity. We are doing charity things. So we are riding with some less fortunate, for example, children whose families are not able to support them with this kind of hobby like motorcycling. So we arrange events where for example we are doing it together with local schools and the weekends in the summertime and they arrange this Saturday events where there are lots of things going on, but we are one part of that. It's nice to see the kids' faces when they first time they are in motorcycle, riding with motorcycle, not riding, but you know, pillowing the motorcycle, things like that.
Do you have a clubhouse? Do you meet there regularly too? Or
yeah, we do have a clubhouse, and it's quite nice. We have some place for servicing, and of course we gather together. Yeah, and every Tuesday evening we have this weekly ride during the summertime, and that kind of thing.
What about women in the club? How many are there? Do you know?
Yeah, I know. I just looked at the statistics. So I think it's 24% at the moment. So there are women, and they have their own chapter or section in our club. They do also this only for women thing. But in general, we are doing everything together. But yes, they are really active also. You see more and more women riders on road. And in my experience, I think that women who ride, they are really focusing on this hobby much more than guys in general. They are really putting really much thought about what they are doing, how to ride and how to be a good rider, and it's growing, and it's very good that it's growing. Really, really good riders in general.
I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this podcast would like to visit the northern countries, especially Finland too. Is it a good place for motorcyclists? Is it difficult? What is your experience as being one of them up there?
If you look at Finland on the map, we are just close to the Russia and close to the Sweden, and up north we are also very close to Norway, but we don't have the mountains as Norway does, and we don't have the scenery roads as for example Norway. But in Finland, if you're looking for a very fresh air, so to say, so very clean nature and things like that, and very open roads, It's a good place. We have nice roads. But if you look at the, for example, southern Finland, there is not so much bending roads or that kind of super scenery roads if you compare to the middle Europe or Alps or whatever. We are a country of thousands of lakes, and there's lots and lots of nice gravel roads. That's one of the main things if you look at Finland from another country. So here you really can ride the gravel roads. They are really, really well kept, and you can ride up to 80 kilometers per hour easily, and it's totally legal, and they're in really, really good shape, and that's something that I think that in Europe, for example, you don't find so much. And you can travel basically. I don't know if you're familiar with this Trans-European Trial Roads, the maps and ways to travel Europe, basically only on gravel roads. So in Finland, you find very, very nice gravel roads. And you can think that the more north you go in Finland, the more wilderness and nature you find. So if you love nature and you want to camp with your tent and do things like that in nature by yourself, then it's definitely you need to come to Finland and see it by yourself. In the middle of summer, there is a time period when the sun doesn't set at all, and it's really, really nice. But at the same time, I think you need to cover up with warm clothes, even in summertime if you go up north. So the weather can change really quickly. And it's not uncommon to have snow in June, for example, in northern Finland. But basically, it's the roads are still rideable and the snow melts away. But you need to be prepared much more than in Europe, for example. But all in all, it's really nice roads, and then there's lots of lakes, lots of nice gravel roads. But all the paved roads, I would say the big roads are really boring, to be honest. And if you go up north, really, really up, like Lake Inari, if you look at the map, there's a huge lake. In northern Finland, it's really nice place, and it's also, there's lots of culture. And I don't know how to say it in English, but it's the Saame land. There's northern people who we call Saamelaiset, and they are their own population there, and it's really, really nice. Nice to take a look at that too. If you come to Finland and if you come to Western Finland, I'm always willing to help, and you can contact me through the social media, and I will reply, of course, and help you with any travel plans or whatever you need in Finland or questions or whatsoever. And if you come to Finland in August, we have this great meeting in Western Finland here in Pori called Yyteri meeting. It's the biggest beach in the northern Europe, and just very nice meeting with the motorcyclists and riders, even from France. I think that last time we had some visitors from France. So
people who are listening to this podcast, they can contact you when they're on their way to Finland and say, hey, Jussi, do you have a tip for me, an idea where I need to go or so? That's possible.
Sure, of course. That's what brothers do, so to say. So if you ride a bike, you're welcome to contact, of course.
Tell me about speed limits and speed tickets, something a lot of motorcyclists really love.
Yeah, well, we have normal speeds in Finland. In the motorway, it's 120, and normally in the bigger roads, it's in the summertime, it's 100 kilometers an hour, and in the wintertime, 80. And in the suburbs and cities, of course, very, very low speeds, but don't get a ticket in Finland. It's not a good idea. It's really, really expensive. It's extremely expensive. I can't push this enough. Don't take a ticket in Finland. But at least if you're driving really hard, for example, 140 in a 100 area, you will get thousands and thousands of euros of ticket. So don't do it. It's expensive. It's expensive.
It's a good advice from the president of one of the biggest motorcycle clubs in Finland. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but of course we think that we always need to follow the rules and regulations, but it's easy to have these speeds with bikes, so be careful.
Jussi, what are your favorite countries outside of Finland for a motorcycle tour?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know really how to answer, because then almost in every country there's something very special and something that is really nice. But I like Alps. I don't see a big difference if I go to the Alps and travel, for example, from Austria to Switzerland and so on. So for me, everything is working. And I like the Balkans really much. I think that the people are nice in Bosnia and Herzegovina and Serbia and Montenegro and so on. We've been traveling there also, and the nice, they're really nice scenery roads. Southern Germany is really nice, and German people are nice. But it's basically for me, it's about people. It's always in the end, it's about people, and people are nice no matter where you go. That's my experience. To answer something, I think that it's the Alpine roads and nicest places probably in Switzerland and Austria, and also I think that the Julian Alps in Slovenia are really, really nice, and the nature in Slovenia, it's untouchable. It's there are not so much people, not so much bikes, and not so much traffic. So you can really feel the nature in Slovenia, for example, the Bled area and so on.
Jussi, what's coming up next? Where are you heading to with your motorcycle? Any plans together with your wife or alone for a tour?
Yeah, both. Yeah, we have plans and hope that this pandemic situation will go away. But if it does go away, we will go in September to Europe, and we have some plans to go there, maybe in Italy and Slovenia and so on, at least in Germany, southern Germany. And otherwise, I have some trainings coming as an instructor, and then I also try to train myself with some training methods that we have in Finland, and lots of things coming up. So I hope that we are able to have those trainings and be able to put them out, and but we will see what will be the COVID situation. But yes, and lots of plans for the coming summer.
Is there any special gear that you would not want to miss on tour?
Well, there's lots of experiences, but of course you need to have the basic tools. There's lots of good stories, with, for example, that comes to my mind right now. But I would say that you need to have this duct tape and you need to have some basic tools. And if you drop the bike or anything like that, you need some tape and you need those plastic things and to be able to continue. And of course, I would recommend to have some extra power, even to start the bike if needed. But otherwise, it's first aid kit. It's some extra power for your mobile. And if you really need to leave the bike and start wandering around to find help, you need to be able to reach yourself and your friends or whatever. But otherwise, just take care of the documentation and make it double. So if you have a passport, make a copy of it and put it somewhere else where the original passport is. And there's basic traveling rules, I would say. And if you go somewhere else, Germany or France or Denmark or Sweden or Finland, where everybody talks English, but if you go east, little bit more, or there's no English, there's nothing, so you need to be prepared that, okay, take something. For example, when we were in Ukraine, they talked to me all the time, and I understood zero words. I had no idea what they wanted. So I was putting all the papers, green cards and passports and documentations of the bike and my own driver license. What do you want? And finally, they just wanted to make a check to my panniers, you know, my side bags. But what do I have there? And then they were, I don't know. You just need to smile and be patient. Patience is a good advice. Not a tool, but good advice.
You see, there are a lot of stories to be found out on the road. So maybe you could share some of your stories with us.
There's lots of things. Usually these things are funny afterwards. But when they occur, it's not that funny at the time. But there's lots of things. I remember we were in northern Italy, and we were heading to Lake Garda, Lago di Garda, and it was really, you know, late afternoon, and I was looking at my map. But okay, there's a shortcut. Mistake number one. I found a shortcut. Okay, we take the shortcut. But of course, I haven't been there before, so it was a really, really high mountain road. We went there, and I look at the map. We should be, it's not that far. Well, it's not that far in kilometers distance, but it took more than 2 hours to go over the lake, over the mountain, sorry. And it was totally dark. There's no lights, nothing, and really narrow road. And I had a black visor in my helmet. So I didn't see anything. and then we came, we reached the top of the mountain, and we started to come down slowly. Then I felt my rear brake pad went down. So, okay, I cooked the liquids of the rear brake, and I only had the front brake anymore. And when we finally came back, my wife asked me that, do you really think that it was a shortcut? No, I don't think so. And actually, when the hotel owner found out that what route have I chosen, he was actually a little bit angry at me. You should never go there when it's dark, even the locals. Of course, there's lots of things, but the other one was, we were actually in Italy again. It happened 2 years ago, and we were leaving northern Italy to go actually to Switzerland early, very early in the morning. And we went, and then I saw this flashlight in the dashboard. No ABS brakes. And I was like, what is going on? And nothing wrong. Bike was handling really nice. And what's going on? And I just kept pushing, and another signal came up. And then I stopped, and I was trying to find, the brakes are fine and everything is fine. And motor is running nice and there's no leaks, nothing. And then we stop after that to fill up the gas tank, and we filled up the gas tank, and after that nothing happened. And I was like, okay. We were in the countryside, it was a cold station, there was no people around us at all. I was like, okay, this is not good. And the first thing, I took my tools and then took the battery away, and right away I saw that the other one of the plugs, the positive plug, the plus, mm-hmm. the red one, it was loose. And I realized, okay, this is actually the only failure in the bike. So I put it back on, tighten it up, and after that we go. So you have to be able to do a little bit things like that when you're touring on your own. So
now you're riding the BMW Adventure, big one. What do you specifically like about it?
Of course, I like it. It's second in a row. I upgraded it in the new one in 19. It has a new engine, a little bit more power than the old one, and a little bit more torque. The engine is the power line is very nice. You have all the power in a very low revs already. You don't have to shift all the time. And I use the engine very, very nicely. That's a strong part. And also, there's no chain, so it's really maintain-free bike. And I think that it's a twin-cylinder boxer, and then the central weight is very low. So basically, it's a huge bike. It weighs over 260 kilograms. And it might sound that, okay, it's a monster, I can't handle it. But when you go put it on and start moving, it's like riding a bike. And I think that the because of the power, the weight is so low, it's really easy to handle. And also the position is, all the handles are really, really well thought. But of course, it's 40 years old model, so they have had some time to improve it. So I think that it's one of the best in the market, and it can cope basically everything. Mm-hmm. It's not best on the truck, and it's not best on the road, and it's not best in the. It's not best basically anywhere, but it handles everything. You can do it basically everything. Maybe it's not best, not the fastest, but you can handle it. Mm-hmm. And it can handle everything. There's lots of good things. There's a huge, huge fuel tank, so you can have a very, very long range. If you really drive nicely, you can find easily 600 kilometers with one tank. I like it. Two up, no problem, enough power. You can go very bendy roads with quite nice fast speed, and still it handles really well. You have quite a nice cover when it's raining and so on. So I think that it's really an adventure bike. You can do the globe with that bike. Of course, it's heavy. If you drop it, you have to put it up. so it's heavy. But there's also a technique for that if you want to learn. So even a small woman can put it up back if needed. So, but I think that's the best part of the BMW GS. You can do anything. It's up to you.
How would you explain the fascination of riding a bike to someone who has never done this and who's thinking about it?
I think it has something to do with freedom, the feeling. It's only you and your bike. So you become one. You go with your bike, and you have all the smells inside of your helmet, and you can go to places where you can't go with the car or whatever, and you can just decide that, okay, now I just go. And of course, the other thing is the power you can feel. Usually the bikes are really fast compared to cars or whatever, so it's at least I enjoy a lot about the feeling of the power that you can really accelerate fast, and it feels good, and you can do a little wheelie if you want, and so on. It's like born to be wild thing somehow. I don't like to think that it has something to do with the American style of freedom where you ride without a proper gear or that's not my thing. I would like to use all the gear. If I drop the bike or if I go to have an accident or whatever, I would like to maximize my chances, so to say. But to answer your question, I think it's the feeling, the freedom, being part with some machine, and it's only you and the machine at the time. It's difficult to describe. You can't have it with the car, maybe with the Formula One, maybe. Probably you are one with the machine, but the normal road car, no. The power line and all the smells, you are really all your instincts are boosted, if you know what I mean, when you're riding a bike. So you feel the bending, you feel the angles, you feel the braking and the acceleration. It's 100% pure joy, I would say, something like that. Difficult question.
Well, you see, as a motorcycle instructor, you have probably seen it all. What are the most common mistakes motorcyclists, even the most experienced ones, make?
Well, if I compare older bikers and young bikers, at least in Finland, I think that in EU, you have to, nowadays, you have to go to the driving school and take some lessons and before you can start with the small bikes. And that has been a perfectly good decision, I would say, when I look at the skills when the new rider comes. They already know, they already understand some basic rules that how the bike handles and what is important and what is not. But then if I look at, for example, 50 years old guys that have been riding 30 years and millions of kilometers or whatever, the problem is that they, in my experience, they have a little bit of, you know, there's some kind of a fence to accept that, okay, I can't do that and I can't do this. And it's difficult to say aloud, okay, I need some practice. I want to come better. And that's basically because they didn't have to take any lessons. They just started to riding a bike when they were young and they self-learned. That's the biggest problem. And after they come and encourage themselves and start joining, they find, okay, for example, braking is one of my favorite things. The old guys very often tell that, okay, I only use the rear brake. And I ask why, because that's not the way to effectively stop the bike. I'm used to use it, and I don't want to touch the front brake because I'm afraid that the front will slip away and I will fall. That's usually the starting point of the discussion. We all know that if you brake hard, all the weight goes to the front, and then you just start pushing and pushing and pushing a little bit more and more, like firing a gun, that kind of things. The younger one, they already understand this because they have been learning it in the school. The other thing is when you see a bendy road, there's two ways to turn the bike when it's moving. You can lean yourself and wait, and the bike will turn. Or I want to teach everyone that you have the handlebar and you push. You push and you push and you find it after you have 50 kilometers an hour or whatever. If you push the left, it will go the left. But what happens with the wheel, it actually turns the other way. And then because the shape of the motorcycle wheel is different than the car wheel. This is sometimes a little bit difficult people to understand. They are looking at me like I'm an idiot or a lunatic or what is this guy explaining to me? But of course everyone is doing that, but it's important to learn it to push the bike. Then you are able to make a fast move. If you need to avoid a car or whatever, you just push the bike. And so this is probably, these two things are the biggest differences between the old and the young riders. Well, the good one for old riders is that they understand the basic rules of staying alive. You don't so don't be a fool and use all the power in the wrong places and so on. So I think that with the young one, there's a certain time and place for taking out all the power of the bike, but not in the public road. So, but we have all been young,
right.
So we know.
Jussi, you live in Pori. Could you tell us a little bit about this city?
Pori is located in the west coast of Finland. We have a little more than 100,000 inhabitants. So in Finland, we are average size of city. In a small country, we have a little less than 6 million people only in the whole country. But Pori is a nice place. We have a nice place called Ytäri Beach. I think that it's one of the biggest sand beaches in the northern Europe. It's 15 kilometers that direction from me right now. And the other thing is that we have a very nice jazz festival in every summer. So it's I think that it started 1965 called Poverty Jazz Festival, and lots of big names, Rolling Stones from Status and so on, have been visiting here, Tom Jones, whatever the name is, we got it. But otherwise, it's a normal city in Finland. So maybe those two things are something exceptional compared to the other cities in Finland.
Jussi Mäki from Finland. What a great guy to meet and to talk to. Be sure to contact him next time you are visiting Finland on your bike. If you all want to connect and catch up with Jussi via social media, just check our website, graveltalk.com. Graveltalk.com. You will find all the links you need, along with some photos of Jussi on the road. So be sure to check our website, graveltalk.com. Till we meet again, our next Gravel Talk podcast will be available soon. Ciao, ciao. Jussi.